This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, auto, home, light, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. I just named some of the insurance needs, and everybody has multiple insurance needs. They handle them all. They make sure you're fully insured. They save you money because they're the pros, the best in the business. And customer service means everything to them at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Right, we got a limited window here with Jerry Dulac, my good friend. Jerry, welcome to the show. I know not many people have seen as many NFL field goals this year as you have.
Steve, always a treat to be with you, as you know, my friend. And yeah, I tell you, the only thing we see more than field goals is penalty flags, it looks like.
Oh.
And that's not a good thing for the product. And I'm sure the owners are intently watching how many flags are being thrown, because they don't like to see their product kind of being disrupted like that and kind of soiled upon, if you will.
You make a really good point. I want to follow up on that, Jerry, because to me, officiating should be about what affects the play. Now, holding penalty obviously affects the play. But I was watching the Texans-Bears game the other night, and I brought this up earlier in the week. And they threw a pass down the far sideline. The Texans pick it off, and it's wiped out because of a pass interference play that's 30 yards away in the middle of the field. Well, that play had nothing to do with this. And to me, you hold the flag unless it's affecting the play, and they're too happy to throw it, it seems.
Or, Steve, you just go pick up the other one when you huddle and say, hey, look, yeah, it was a penalty, but it was away from the play, and it doesn't affect the play, and just pick it up. And I agree with you, and that's part of the problem I have with some of the calls. You know, I'm not an official baiter by any stretch of the imagination, but there are ways just like you do with replay. Not that it merits a big discussion. It's very simple. You go, hey, that was away from the play. It didn't affect the play. And pick the flag up. Pick the flag up and stop some of these needless penalties. But I can tell you from being at the NFL owners meetings every year, they are concerned about the pace of play. They are concerned about how many disruptions to play. That's why they're very much aware of how much replay they want to use in the game, because then that will delay it even more. And so, you know, excess officiating is, a part and parcel of that as well. And so, believe me, that will get the owner's attention, probably quietly, but it'll get their attention, and it'll trickle down, because that's the last thing they want to see.
All right, so the other part, I brought up field goals, and there have already been 36 field goal attempts beyond 50 yards, of which 34 have been made. Well, 36 is a lot for 2 weeks, as you and I both know. That means you've got 36 drives that are ending at about the 35-yard line. That's what it means to me. I mean, you're not even in the red zone, and the drive is over. How much of this is the cover two part, and how much of this is the fact that maybe you don't have enough quality quarterbacks that can handle it?
Well, I think that is part of it, because that affects the part where they're not getting past that 35-yard line. But I'll tell you the other thing that happens here too, Steve, and I've had this discussion most recently, in fact, with the Steeler kicker, and I'm going to pursue it even more, and that is, the 50-yard field goal used to be kind of a badge of honor. It was a milestone for NFL kickers. Now, Steve, that's like a 40-yard field goal for these kickers. The 60-yard field goal is now what the 50-yard field goal was. The leg strength and the training techniques and the speed of their legs, if you will, has greatly increased the distance for these guys with field goals. I'll give you a small example. Now, I know the Steelers were in the rarefied air, 88 degrees, so the ball's going to fly even farther. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris Boswell is in warm-ups, is hitting them from 63 yards halfway up the net. Will Lutz, the Denver kicker, this in pregame, hits it from 66 yards. And I said to Boswell after the game, I go, why didn't you push it back to 70? He goes, well, I already hit it halfway up the net, so I knew how far I can kick it. And so, yeah, they're getting a little boost from the altitude, of course, you know, whatever that is, 5 to 10% or whatever they get. But nonetheless, you know, a 70-yard field goal is not without the realm of possibility in Denver with today's kickers. And I think that's part of it, too. These guys are not afraid, the coaches, to have their guys kick it from 50-plus because, really, it's nothing for them anymore, Steve.
Well, that's a great point, Jerry. That's a great point. When you look at the play of Justin Fields to this point, what do you like and what are potential concerns?
Well, I think what they like and what has been good is he hasn't turned the ball over. And you see what he can do with his feet. And, yes, he has a cannon for an arm. And, Steve, the play he made the other day, speaking of penalties, you know, where he rolls to the right and he throws some 50-yard, 51-yard completion down the sidelines to George Pickens while running away from pressure, running to his right. You're not going to see any quarterback, I don't care who it is at any level, make a greater play than what he made. And all that is kind of emblematic of the skill set of this guy. But it's 3.5 years now. He won 10 games in 3 years in Chicago. Steve, that's tough to do. So, yeah. Obviously, there are some issues going on with Justin Fields. So, you know, I think we know he can run the ball. If he has to go through his progressions, he's getting to about one or two, and then he's touching it. But that's kind of the way they want him to play. You know, they don't want him opening it up because I think they know what will happen if he, quote, tries to open it up. But, you know, he's 2-0 for the first time in his career, yeah. And that's because he has the benefit of what is a very good defense, too.
And that's the next question, is the defensive part of it. I know Atlanta, Kirk Cousins is still somewhat wounded, but he showed against Philadelphia he can play. We know that Denver right. with Bo Nix, let's face it, I mean, those three starting quarterbacks that are rookies in the NFL have gone through 2 weeks, and not one of them's thrown a touchdown pass yet. But that defense for the Steelers, when you look at them, the pyramid starting with Watt and building out, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think the back end from the linebackers through the secondary, Steve, much improved. You know, you bring in Patrick Queen, which was, to me, maybe the biggest free agent addition that they made. You know, you got the top inside linebacker. You gave him the biggest contract you've ever given in free agency. They bring in Deshaun Elliott, strong safety, upgrade. They trade to get Dante Jackson, cornerback, big upgraded corner to go with Joey Porter Jr. So that has really strengthened the middle to back end of their defense. I'm still somewhat concerned about the defensive line because they did nothing to improve the defensive line. They are hoping that Cam Hayward at age 35 can recapture his form after an injury-plagued season. And they're counting on Keanu Benton, as you recall, from the Wisconsin days against Penn State, taking another big step because he was very, very good last year as a rookie. But in terms of drafting, which to me, they have to draft the next Cam Hayward. They have to draft a stud on the defensive line. That to me is priority number one and actually has been for the last 2 years, but really has to be now. So I think their defensive line, it's not a liability, but it's not a strength. And I think they have strengthened the next two levels of the defense. And so far, that's what we've seen, you know, in these first two games.
What's it been like for you watching Watt on an every game basis and what he brings to the table and the attention an offense needs to pay to him?
Yeah, and does pay attention to him. You know, Steve, I'm watching, you know, I'm in Atlanta for that opener, and T.J. Watt, you know, it's his first game. He hasn't played in the preseason. And the first five plays, the Texans run this zone scheme to the left, 4 yards, 7 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, 3 yards. Then they decide, okay, we're going to run it to the right at T.J. Watt. Drops him for a 3 yard loss. That was about the last time they ran that side. And pretty much after he just got into the game, you know, it's a low scoring game, a tight game. The offense isn't really doing a lot. They're kicking field goals. That is the perfect game for TJ Watt to take over, and that's what he did. You know, he had two sacks, one of which was a strip sack and fumble recovery. You know, it was the three team parlay right there for him.
Yep.
And it was negated by a penalty. A stat line would have been even more impressive than it was, but it's just how he can take over and dominate a game, and that's exactly what he did. And I got a kick out of the week of the game. The Falcons coach, Raheem Moore, says, we're not going to let T.J. Watt wreck the game. Well, guess what? T.J. Watt wrecked the game, Steve.
Yeah.
And that's what he can do. That's what he can do, and that's what he does.
We've talked a lot about various guys on the offense, you know, about Pickens, a Freiermuth, and so forth. You know, when you've talked to the Steelers about Zach Frazier, the rookie out of West Virginia at center, what did they tell you about him?
You know, Steve, they are just so impressed with this guy. You know, if you watch the, like, individual highlights of him, you see the way he turns guys, you see the way he moves guys, you see not only the way he pancakes guys. My old late friend Twin Chilkin would always say, get him on the ground and gore him, and that's what Zach Frazier does as well. I mean, he's been very, very impressive. And you talk about an upgrade, you know, to positions, that is certainly an upgrade over what they had. Mason Cole was a dependable center, but this guy looks like he could be a special player.
And, see, that's the wrestling background. I mean, that ability to get somebody to the ground, that wrestling background that Frazier has comes to play as a center in the National Football League.
There's no question about it, Steve, and you can see it on just about every one of those plays for the most part. Plus, not only that, the guys tell me that he, you know, he is a bright guy. You know, the center has to know what everybody really is doing, not only on the offensive line, but, you know, the offense in general. And they tell me he's a smart guy as well. And for a rookie, he's very heady with the way he plays.
Jerry, I know you've got something else you have to take care of. It was a limited window, but I'll take any window I can get with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Steve, it's always a treat to talk with you. And I will tell you that because my daughter graduated over a year ago, the thing I miss the most are my trips back to campus. I'm starting to get a little separation anxiety, so I'm going to have to make a trip up there very soon.
You let me know. We're going to get some dinner or something, okay?
That's a date. You got it, brother. Thank you.
Always
nice talking with you, Steve.
Same here. The great Jerry Dulac. I mean, awesome reporter, better guy. Always great to have him on the show. Next half hour, Sweeney Murdy is going to be with us. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Okay, to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Don't forget our roundtables tomorrow. High school roundtable. Lewisburg's got a big matchup. Battle of the Unbeatens, right?
Yep, up at Warrior Run.
Yeah, they got that. Sealands Grove now, they're back on the winning track. So they're back in action, and Chickalamy's trying to find something. And let's see if they can this week. Kevin won't be able to do the game on Friday night. Steve Williams is doing it. Kevin has to have something taken care of on Friday, and he's fine. But we just want to make sure all our best to our good friend. And Steve Williams will do a terrific job, and then we'll get Kevin back in the saddle and going again. And we'll kid him left and right that it's the best broadcast we've heard from Chickalamy in years. You know, but that's only because we're kidding around with him. But Williams will do a great job. But we're looking forward to hearing from everybody tomorrow. And let's see if we can get all three local teams that we air to find wins. Makes the conversation even more fun coming up on Thursday. So that's tomorrow's show. So we got 1:35 tomorrow we have them?
1:35.
Eastern time? No, I'm just kidding. I remember doing
Eastern or Central, if it's Mountain or Pacific, nobody will be here.
I remember doing the talk show in Las Vegas, doing this show in Las Vegas. This was when we were 3 to 5. And Las Vegas is in Pacific time. And you're like, okay. So the show would be from noon to 2. Okay, I got all day to the rest of the day to do whatever. It's actually kind of fun. But it was also the holidays. And I've told this story before. They played, ironically, Kent State for third place because they lost by 1 to Colorado the night before. It was a tough one. So they beat Kent State, and Penn State's going to take the red eye. And it had warped past midnight. And we're on the bus, and this is when Shep Garner was on the team, and Shep Garner's cousin is Flava Flav. So Flava Flav comes on the bus, and he keeps going up to each seat. He goes, "Hey, Steve, Merry Christmas." I said, "You haven't lived until Flava Flav wished you Merry Christmas in Las Vegas."
That's something that you can say that not a lot of people can say.
That's exactly right.
If you ever run into him again, I want a clock.
He had the clock on. He had the clock on.
I know. I want one.
I'll tell him that. Like, you haven't lived until it's 12:05 on Christmas Eve, right? A.M. And Flava Flav is wishing you Merry Christmas and a safe trip home.
what things that only happen in Vegas, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. We got back to Philadelphia at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, oh, man, I'll freely admit, I was a little tired on that Christmas Eve. Because at that point, you had to bus back. You know, there wasn't a flight from Philly over. We had to bus back. Like, oh. So, got back early in the afternoon. It's like, oh, man. Okay. Let's see if we can somehow make it to 10 o'clock at night. Like, hey.
Did you ask for the Christmas Eve sermon to be a little bouncier than normal?
I don't even know if I heard it. I'm sure it was something really good. I went to the 4 o'clock mass. I'm like, okay, I'll let her rip. What'd you think? You were great. You're fabulous. We loved it. It's like, wait, what did I say? Not a clue. I'll do whatever. Come on, stay away. Stay away. Come on. You can do it. Oh, goodness. Tomorrow night, Jets, Patriots. Friday night, Illinois at Nebraska. So I'm going to be locked in on that game Friday night. I think that game starts at 8 o'clock, too. And, yeah.
I said yesterday that I didn't realize both of those teams were ranked. I was just reading something this morning. One of the national college football writers did not realize that both teams were ranked either. So I'm not the only one that's surprised.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? Like, oh, really? They are? Well, it's Wednesday the 18th. We're waiting for white smoke from the Big Ten when it comes to the basketball schedule. Somebody, anybody.
I mean, it's only 6 weeks away, right?
Absolutely. No need to sell tickets now. No. Who wants to do that? Well, I guess with 18 schools, it becomes a far more difficult proposition, so. Which I do understand and appreciate. But, quote, any day now.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Game week means a trip to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanut, freshen out every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. All right, let's talk some baseball now. The great Sweeney Murdy joins us. How you been, my friend?
I'm wonderful, Jonesy. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Great. Thanks for asking. We saw Aaron Judge break a 16-game homerless streak with a grand slam. And in fact, one of the students in my class was at the game and had to show me on his phone the home run today, which I thought was kind of neat, as a matter of fact. And so, but this has not been the best time of the year for him, you know, compared to other months of the year, whether it's September, October. What is it that you see in him sometimes at this time of the year? Does he get tired and worn down because he's playing so many games like he did a couple of years ago when he hit 62?
I just think, the pitching tightens up a little bit on him, you know, and teams are going, you're playing teams that have postseason aspirations, right? I mean, the Mariners are a good example. The Red Sox are still trying to win games here. And you can, you have a certain strategy and you're willing to chance it sometimes, I think, in April, May, June, July, August, September. There's always calendar. You have a lot of left on the calendar. But then when the games start to dwindle, you really have to, pick your spots and understand, I'm not going to give this guy a pitch to hit if I can help it. I mean, we saw it to an extreme with, Cole Devers the other day. But I think that's a big part of it. Judge is pretty selective, and I think part of it is teams kind of bearing down and guys aren't as willing to challenge him when they've got really only little time left on their calendar to make their postseason wishes and dreams come true.
All right, when you look at, let's start with the American League. We know the Yankees are going to be a contender to get to the World Series. Who else realistically can do it based on starting pitching, their rotation, and also how well they've been playing?
Yeah, I think that's getting harder and harder to figure out around the league, because even your powerhouse teams, you wonder, do they have enough pitching to get there? I mean, like, that's the question with the Dodgers right now, right?
Oh, goodness.
And you would have thought, beginning of the year, like, why are we even questioning anything about, their roster? But the injury situation around the league has taken its toll. The rest of the American League, I don't know. Like, here's the problem. In New York, I'm dealing with a lot of Yankee fans who just aren't convinced their team is good enough. But the question you're asking is the important one. Who else in the American League is good enough?
Yeah.
The Orioles have shown their flaws very recently. You know, the Central always has interesting teams, but they always seem to come up a little bit short when you're talking about Cleveland or Minnesota in a postseason series. The West is not very good shape this year. The Astros are their weakest. They've been in the last, 8 years probably. And, nobody else really puts that fear into you. The only fear you'd have is a team that just gets hot. And that's what we've seen come through the last few years in the postseasons, whether it was Philly a couple of years ago or Arizona, even Texas. You know, you just have to get hot, and you can take down anybody. You know, the Hunter Win Mets team, the Braves, the Dodgers, they've all experienced it. That's the big fear. The Yankees are equipped to win any postseason series. I truly believe that, because there isn't anybody I can say is, oh my gosh, they're better than them, you better be scared of them. It's just a matter of, you know, who's showing up that day to get the final three outs? Who's showing up that day to get the first 21 outs? You know, it's hard to predict right now, but I would think the Yankees have as good a shot as any, you know, despite what the worst fears of the fan base is, because they've gone 15 years without seeing it end in a parade.
And the bottom line is, who gets the final three outs? That has been a mystery now for a while with them. And also, after Soto and Judge, do they have enough of a lineup that you can maybe pitch around those two guys, even though it's two guys on base? Can you pitch around those two guys and get enough out of the other guys?
I think, you know, to your first question, it's not a unique situation. If you go back over the last 10 years, you have teams that have had to find their closer again.
Yeah,
you go through the regular season one way, and then you get to the postseason. You know, the Red Sox done it time and time again over the course of their championship runs in 13 and 18. You had the Nationals, and thinking of somebody else here very recently. You know, the Astros. Actually.
Astros.
Yeah,
Astros.
You know, they had to figure out their bullpen on the fly. And those are things that, you know, even the best equipped teams have to do. So I think that's the situation the Yankees find themselves in now. As far as their lineup, listen, it's not basketball, you know, where you have your stars have to perform, but your stars kind of have to perform. Sorry, if Aaron Judge and Juan Soto aren't getting big hits, the Yankees are not advancing in the postseason. And I hate to put that kind of pressure on the rest of the lineup, but it's kind of reality and kind of fact. I don't think there's any way around that.
Yeah, I'll give everybody an example. In 2018, who got the final three outs of the World Series? It was not the closer, Craig Kimbrell. It was Chris Sale. So you figure it out as you go, because you have to go with the hot hand at the time. The Phillies, to me, are a team, Sweeney, that epitomize why you're playing 162 games. Awesome start, big slump, back on track again right now. Is that a fair way to look at them at this point?
Yeah, and I think, you know, whether it's the Phillies or anybody else, I think because of how immersed we are in the sport and all the different ways we can consume it now, what Brian Cashman said long ago about the Yankees and how they play a season, I think applies to many other teams. He once said that the Yankees don't play 162-game season. They play 162 one-game seasons. And the reaction based off of every win or loss is basically what he's referring to. And I think that's kind of how you see, you know, the Phillies. I mean, you're basically, what every Major League Baseball team shows you is that you're capable of losing 3 out of 4 at any given point in time. And that's
right.
What scares you, because that's what sends you home in October. And even now you're frightened of it in May, June, or July, because, oh my gosh, if we can lose, you know, 2 out of 3 to the Marlins or the Nationals, what's going to happen when you lose game one to the Padres or the Dodgers or you know, whoever you're facing in a playoff series? It's a different kind of animal. It's pressure. And you see it play out the last few years where it's been an NCAA tournament style. Listen, Duke and North Carolina and Kentucky all have number one seeds every year, and UConn, and they all have great teams. They don't win every year because it's not designed that way anymore. I think that's what baseball is. But you go in thinking you have a shot, and when you have horses like the Phillies have or like the Dodgers have or like the Yankees have, you kind of just take your chances. No matter how you end up there at the end of September, you're going to want to take your chances. Other teams who are fighting for those spots are the ones who are hoping to get in and hope that the hot streak takes over.
Right, exactly. And the Dodgers are interesting. I know Ohtani is on this pace 50 for 50. I've got it. But how important in reality is Mookie Betts to what they're doing?
Betts, Freeman, everybody, really, they are.
Yeah.
But, you know, it goes back again to what I said about Judge and Soto. You know, okay, the Dodgers might have a little bit more lineup depth, but, you know, not that much more if you get around those guys. You know, they're bottom half of the order. Okay, Muncy, you know, Kike Hernandez has got big postseason hits in his career, all those things. But, you know, it's going to revolve around those guys. And listen, let's not downplay, and I know you're not. I understand your point about what the Dodgers look like in the postseason, but it's just amazing what Shohei Ohtani is doing. The closer he gets to 50-50 and the kind of perspective that we are putting it in. And I've been thinking about it more the last couple of days as he gets closer. You know, Aaron Judge is in position to potentially win a triple crown.
Right.
He can hit a home run and help himself in all three columns at once.
Right.
Shohei Ohtani can only do one of these things at a time. Right? The power and the speed are so amazing. He hits a home run, he's obviously circling the bases. He needs the singles and the walks, you know, not doubles, you know, really, because you're not stealing third that much, in order to put himself in a position where he can steal and put all those things in motion with the speed that he has, the instincts and the smarts on the base paths that he has to pick those opportunities and be as efficient and successful as he is. The fact that he can only do one of those two things at a time is kind of cool and fun for me. And beyond that, I know there's a debate about should he win an MVP because he's the DH. Now, I've long since tired of those kinds of debates. The DH is a real position. We've given MVPs to closers in Major League Baseball and starting pitchers. You know, what's wrong with the DH? It's a real position. And beyond that, something that kind of stuck in my mind here just earlier today, I was reading a piece that Tyler Kepner wrote in The Athletic, and Juan Pierre talks about it. And it kind of I heard Miguel Rojas today on MLB Network Radio mention this. You know, he gets to the ballpark early and watches Shohei Ohtani getting ready. And his process to get ready includes rehabbing his pitching injury.
Mm-hmm.
He's not pitching, but guess what? He is on a rehab program like any other injured pitcher would be, which means he's coming to work and trying to get ready to pitch. He's putting in all this work, and he's going out and being this amazing unicorn athlete we see on the verge of 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. You know, I know that there are times we feel we're in this age of overkill. I don't think we can overkill this, Steve. I think when you see something that's never happened before, and whether it gets 50-50 or not, we are seeing it. My gosh, how can you not just appreciate the beauty of it in the sport that we get? We're so jaded because we think we've seen everything. We've never seen this.
Yet how difficult is it because 47% of the population lives in the Eastern time zone, and we don't get to see him play that often?
But I think that's not as true as it used to be. You know, every game, you know, so many games are on TV that are available. Listen, Sandy Koufax was the biggest star in the 60s, and so was Willie Mays. Those guys spent the entire 1960s out on the West Coast when their games were never on TV. They made their names in different ways, and the World Series was a factor, and more people watched the All-Star game, things like that. But you can watch Shohei Ohtani. Before you go to bed, you can see every Shohei Ohtani highlight. You know, game starts at 9:30, 10. If you go to bed at 11 o'clock, you watch the 11 o'clock news, you will see Shohei Ohtani highlights on your phone. You wake up the next morning, you can see every Shohei Ohtani highlight, not pick up the newspaper and see his name in a box score without ever actually seeing a picture or video of him. I don't think that's as true as it used to be, and even then, it was kind of not. I think it was more of an excuse. No bigger star in the last, my lifetime, the last 50 years than Ken Griffey Jr., who spent his best years in Seattle. And again, not every game was necessarily on TV, but who didn't see every Ken Griffey Jr. highlight they wanted to see?
Yeah, but except fewer people are watching SportsCenter than ever before. So that's not helping, though, the cause.
Well, no, but that's why my job becomes important, because I work in MLB social media, and if you're one of the 11 million people following MLB on Instagram or Twitter or everything else, you are finding your content that way, too.
You're also finding Dodger pitching content that's horrifying. I mean, I'll say this. The Dodgers pitchers do, to their credit, make the game interesting. Is that fair?
And that's the big fear. You know, you get to this time, it's why it's just different, right? Like, you can win 100 games in a regular season, but at some point along the way, you lost 2 out of 3 because, you know, one of your pitchers got shelled, and it affected the way you had to use your bullpen the next day. And it's hard to predict. And this is, it's different postseason when you're asking your teams to win 11 games, not 4 and not 7. It's becoming increasingly more difficult. And I don't think it's bad for the sport. I just think that we kind of have to accept that. And when I think you have to take that into consideration of when we're evaluating who these teams are, because getting through a six-month season is still a major undertaking. Mm-hmm. And getting knocked out in the playoffs kind of stinks, but it's not as big an indictment, I don't think, as people want it to be, simply because it's just so hard to do when you're talking about that short series that can derail anybody quickly, even the best teams.
Well, right now there's more offense in Dodgers games than in an NFL game. All right, so that's another field goal. Good, great, can't wait. Means you got the ball to the 35-yard line. Hey, Sweeney, always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend. My best to you and that great family of yours.
Jonesy, thanks so much always for having me. All the kindness and respect you've shown me. I really appreciate it, and I'll look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Good, my friend. Thank you. The great Sweeney Murdy. We will come back, wrap it up in a moment. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their fall kickoff blitz. Savings of up to $12,416 and financing as low as 0%. Score a great deal on the award-winning 2024 Ford Bronco Sport, and SMC has 18 in stock, priced from as low as $29,965. Sunbury Motors is going to give you a Hail Mary of a deal on over 50 2024 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $27,915. Plus, get 1.9% financing for 60 months. SMC is the Hall of Fame of Ford F-150s, with 35 available, with discounts of over $12,000, and they are slashed to the lowest price of the season, starting at only $48,859. Don't let the play clock run out on these awesome deals, as the final drive of savings ends Monday, September 30th. Sunbury Motors is a fifth-generation Ford dealer, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century.
Did you see what the PIAA did today?
The suit came back and told me they approved flag football.
Yeah, girls flag football. What a great move. I'm thrilled to see that. I mean, flag football in the Olympics, I'm like, whatever. It's like, okay, that's nice. But to do it on a high school basis and PIAA, I think that's great. I think that's going to set the tone for a lot of places across the country to do this.
It's cotton. I don't know where that came from. It caught fire in the Pittsburgh suburbs, and they're playing it a lot in the Allentown area too. So it'd be nice to see it around here as well.
I think it's great. I'm thrilled about it. And it's great for girls. Flag football, tremendous. You know, I mean, you can't play it the way the suit played it. I mean, the suit would always have an extra flag in his back pocket and go, oh, look. Everybody's looking around like, it looks like everybody's still wearing their flags. It's just, he's scary. I just, that's why he's ineligible for so many things. But, yeah, no, I think this is a great, great move. I can't say enough good things about it. So, and I'm sure a lot of girls are going to get involved in this and are going to love it. You know? Like I said, the Olympic thing, okay, that's fine. Because I don't know how popular it is around the world. Maybe the hope is this will popularize it around the world.
I didn't realize. I mean, I know. I mean, they've been running that ad with that woman the last two Super Bowls, and I know that there's a pretty regular, you know, league. But I did not realize it was popular enough to be an Olympic sport. But on the other hand, there's also weird Olympic sports too. So
yeah, you know what I think it is, Todd, because it's in the United States, the host country gets to select a sport to try. And this is one of the sports the United States elected to put down as a sport to try.
I think that's how baseball and softball are getting back in, too.
Right, exactly. So they'll give that a shot and then go from there. But yeah, fun show today. High School Roundtable tomorrow.